You've got to know where God's placed you. It might not be the place where you're to unveil this full vision of worship and prayer. It might be a place where you get so burdened for what God wants to do that by the time He does release you, you've not just figured out what you really want to do, but what you don't want to do.
You're listening to the Presence Pioneers podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode. I'm your host, Matthew Lilly, here with a special guest, Chris Burns, and we're excited to talk all about worship today. Before we dive in with this conversation, just want to welcome you if you're new to the podcast. Thank you for checking us out. We want to help you experience and host the presence of God because we believe God's presence changes everything. So we're passionate about worship, prayer, missions, revival. And so if you are as well, please hit follow or subscribe wherever you're tuning in. And we would love to just track with you and help you and encourage you. If you are part of the podcast regularly, welcome back, everybody. We love you guys. Appreciate you. Thank you for engaging with us. Thank you for commenting, subscribing, emailing, rating, reviewing, all the different ways you engage with us, sharing it with your friends, sharing it on social media. We appreciate all of that so much. And welcome back. So, Chris, welcome back to the podcast today. Great to have you.
Good to be back, man. Good to see you, hear your voice. What's that?
Yeah. Yeah. You've been one of the most frequent guests, I think, on our podcast, which is great. We're kind of focusing on worship a lot over the summer. We always talk about worship, but really talking to worship leaders, especially, and just zeroing in on worship specifically. I thought maybe we could start on a light note. And I wanted to ask you if you have any funny stories, any worship fails, any just weird stories that would be hilarious from your years of leading worship and facilitating worship gatherings.
Yes. Yeah, of course. Some of the stories are just too, some of the best ones are just being at wild charismatic churches growing up. I think even now at 38, I'm like all through my 20s, like some of the places, bro, I was going to, you know, borderline cultish. I don't know. I mean, good people, but I've seen old ladies that were as, you know, white as they were tall and walking down a dark aisle, lights off in the church with a giant claymore sword and slayed demons out in front of the altar. Shortly after, the husband came up and grabbed her from behind and they began to kind of bump and grind when the worship got slow. Yeah, man, I've seen some wild stuff. Some of you are like, where are you going, bro? I'm going to the churches with the Hot Topic fake slang in the like, a fake altar, you know, the have you been to churches with the like replica gold ark? I mean, bro, when you walk in and you see that, you know, you're in for a time, you know, at that point, you're in for a 2-hour fire tunnel at the end of the night. Your feet are going to be hurting. You're going to be out of the spirit the last hour of it. It's just going to be like, what? Anyway, well, one time I had fails all the time and still have fails. I've been doing it so long now that no one questions me anymore when I mess up. I just pretend like it was jazz or that, you know, they're the one that messed up, not me. One time, though, I will say this. This is just so crazy. I wonder if there's a video out there, but I was singing spontaneously late night worship. You know how it goes in some of these all night worship sets and prayer sets, Burns, whatever. Bro, it's 1 a.m. and I'm singing with my band, like, I'm in Southern Ohio at this plus-sized church, 400 or 500 people, and I sing Light My Heart on Fire, Light My Heart on Fire. But something switched with fire and heart, and I literally said, Light My Fart on Fire, and I just look at the room, and everybody starts dying laughing, and yeah, I lit my fart on fire in the middle of a deep worship set. So apparently... Yeah, the Lord still stayed around, so I don't think He was too offended by it. But
oh man,
yeah, I've had it. I had a lot
hilarious.
Of
those. My 10-year-old son would have loved that moment.
Oh yeah, oh, live for that. Light your farts on fire from the worship leader. Incredible. Yeah,
that's amazing. I love that. That's so funny. Well, Chris, we've had you on the podcast a number of times, and so if people want to go back and kind of hear some of your story, they can go back and check some of the other episodes out. But The last one we did, we were talking, was about a year ago. We kind of were talking about your journey from the revival on Bourbon Street and the wildness of that to where you kind of got connected with this large church down there, Bethany Church down in Louisiana, and are now in a pastoral role. As far as I know, that's still what you're doing. So yeah, I would love to just know kind of what have you been up to the last year or two with your life and ministry?
What have I been up to? Dude, yeah, well, I'm actually not pastoring anymore.
I didn't know that.
So yeah. That is just as of about 6 months ago. And, you know, that story in itself is kind of a story of just obedience and faith. You know, we had planted our church in New Orleans under a larger, for lack of a better term, you know, mega church, a very large congregation with many campuses. And so we planted, me, my wife, and I in New Orleans, and have an amazing, about 350, 400 member church that is there, very diverse, so representative of the city, healthy, on fire. And it felt like we had really kind of gotten to this place where the Lord said, you're going to be done doing this soon. He said, I want you to step away and put this other guy in. And I kept asking, well, what am I going to do? Because I don't know if you know, Lord, but like, this is the only way we make money right now is how we provide for our family. Eventually, he just said, I didn't tell you to, you know, I'm not going to tell you what you're going to do next. I want you to obey me now. So we essentially went to our bosses and our pastors and said, look, our time pastoring is done. And they said, well, that's great. We love what you guys have built and done. We love you here, but there's no place for you. So I was about to be jobless on a week before my senior leader just calls, and we end up going in and just a God thing. And he's like, why don't we just loose you to do who you are? And so it's been a beautiful kind of dream scenario where now, dude, basically what has happened is that said, whatever you did in New Orleans, can you do that at every campus and then at the whole church now? And this is why, because we're the only campus to have a house of prayer. And I think it's worth noting for those listening that like the biggest thing I've learned in these last 4 to 5, well, I've learned a lot, is that if we're going to really affect change in places that are not echo chambers, in our own streams, and I don't just mean really the church, I mean even culture, we are going to have to die and learn to be leavened. And what this lesson of the season has taught us is that, you know, if we really want to bring change, we've got to just be leavened in the dough. We can't just be around people who agree and see things like us. And so our journey has been one of God putting us on what felt like a Babylonian culture. And I don't mean that to say, again, evil, but just very totally different from what we know church culture as. The people are pure, they're integrous, they love the presence of God. It almost has felt like this reaping the last 6 months, and I don't want to be too long-winded, but just suffice to say that because of building this house of prayer, this worship and prayer expression, and I would just say a presence of God first expression in our local church, they, it's seen, felt, heard, experienced that when you come to New Orleans, Bethany, the presence of God is just off the charts. The familial, relational help among the people is the freedom, the leadership, the attraction of young adults. Now we've got a 50-person deep worship team while a lot of other campuses are struggling to have a full band. And they're going, what are you doing? And it's like, it's real simple, and you're not going to believe the secret. We just made the presence of God the only subject. And we live from that place, and we find that if we make him first, the community grows. The community is healthy. There's health. We're not gathering around a gift. We're not gathering around culture even. We're gathering around not even expression or preference. We're gathering around him, and something magical happens. And so now we've been placed over the entire mega thing, bro. And it's so funny because for anyone listening, it's like, you know, we didn't ask for this. This was not our dream to do this. I got to tell you, I feel like I'm living the dream because I love what we're doing now, because we're around all these incredible hungry people who are like, oh my God, we didn't know this was possible. And we're able to now like raise up a lot of these people that are here now that we have influence and equity and the whole nine yards. We've sown and died for years, you know, and serving another
vision of what we may have wanted to do. Now we're seeing our influence be able to have 10 times more impact because we're going, hey, look, we experimented with this. We did local church with presence prayer worship as its main thing. By the way, we have prayer sets through the week. We've never had people be burned out. We have more people being added to the church daily. Musicians are coming. You know, the Gulch are streaming. It's like God is moving so extravagantly. And I just think it's a testimony to this. The Tabernacle of David expression is not for the charismatic church alone. Yep. It belongs to the whole body of Christ, but it is going to require some pioneers to go, hey, to actually go in to places, cities, regions, cultures, and implant this expression in whatever myriad of ways it needs to come forward inside a culture. Because for me, presence is first, everything flows from that. And we now got an experiment that we've done where I'm like, look, it works.
That's so amazing. That's awesome. Man, so yeah, encouraging. Wow. So you're still with Bethany Church, is that right? You're just sort of now helping all the campuses cultivate this presence of, you know, worship and prayer. Yeah.
Correct.
Wonderful.
That's right.
I love it.
Insane, yeah, right?
That's amazing. Yeah. That's really cool. You know, not everybody has the opportunity to do what you're doing. I think there's probably a lot of people, I've heard from a number of people who are in situations where they feel more limited. They feel like, you know, we're leading worship, but we only get 20 minutes, or, you know, our pastor doesn't get it, or it's a pastor that wants to do it, but the people don't get it, or whatever it may be. And so what would you say? Maybe you could speak to a couple different scenarios there, but, you know, like a worship leader that's kind of like, I'm with you, Chris. I'm on board. I'm resonating with what you're saying, but I feel like I'm not in an environment where I can do that, or I feel a little stuck. I mean, what would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, obviously being in those places when you're in it, dude, it feels like you find yourself in this place of just dying to your dreams and your heart. And you're like, 20 minutes. I remember, you know, for literally two and a half years, dude, I'm shut down. You guys need to understand, like, for those listening, I am not good at a lot of things. Like, I'm just not. I'm really not. Like, the Lord was like, I'm going to let you be good at a few things, and that's it. Like, I can't. I'm not handy. I'm not this, that, yeah. You know, my whole family's construction people, you know, roofers, painters. I can't do any of that worth a flip. But I say, like, I was shut down in all of the things I thought I was doing. I wasn't speaking. I wasn't leading worship. I was pastoring people. And I was thinking, Lord, you have sent me to freaking desert to die. This is what you've done. I look where I messed up. I repented for a year. Like, what did I do? And then, you know, I remember walking off stage, bro, after 20 minutes of ho-hum, three fast, three slow, stinking worship. And I'm literally going, Lord, how much longer do I have to be here? And he's like, again, he told me, it will take as long as it takes for you to stop asking to go. And I had to just die. And I say all that to say this. If you're at a church where you're not able to influence in that way, you just have to have the anchor of knowing God sets you there and there's a purpose for it. And I want to say another huge lesson speaking to that, to people who are like, dude, my pastor doesn't want this. We're either the people, the pastor, whatever, or I don't even know how. How do we take it beyond a worship night? How do we take it to that next level? How do we pastor the people in? How do I serve the pastor's vision while still bringing my vision, my heart? Those are questions with so many different varied dynamics that you're only going to be able to navigate it with the Lord. But let me just give you this nugget. It's the ministry of presence. And something I've been really ruminating on and building out in a revelatory kind of teaching way is this ministry of presence. Because isn't it funny how the Lord's presence often doesn't speak a yes or no, black or white answer, but his presence and the ministry of his presence with us means everything. It's like, I don't need to know the answers, but I do need your presence. You know, we've all been broken and needing answers. We're the boat's going under financially. We're like, Lord, where are you? But when you get in his presence, it's like, oh, yes, yes, I'm whole. Like, if I have you, I have it all. It's because the ministry of presence. Here's what I found. I found out that in my life, my presence, being in the place where God has placed me, is almost as powerful as the words I say, the songs I sing. And I would notice this because I would go on the road or I'd be out of town and then I would come back to my own church. I don't speak because we watch a stinking video. You know, you can tell what I think about that. We're watching a video. It's not that the teaching isn't good. I'm just like, why am I not teaching my content? You know, and I had all these issues and preferences. And I knew I was right, by the way, when I had Bible to back it up. And so whatever to all that, you know, people get into that. It's like, you think God won't take you to a place where it offends all of your sensibilities and what you think you know? No, he will. And so the thing is, man, it's like I'd come back and people would go over and over and over and hear, dude, when you are here, I mean, even when I just see you in the building, lifting your hands in worship, it brings me so much plus. It brings me so much. It was like the ministry of me just being where God had placed me. The ministry of presence was bringing change and it was attracting people. And so I saw that, like, I would just say this to those who are frustrated. It's like, you've got to know where God's placed you. It might not be the place where you're to unveil this full vision of worship and prayer. It might be a place where you get so burdened for what God wants to do that by the time he does release you, you've not just figured out what you really want to do, but what you don't want to do because you've seen it in the wrong way. I'll tell you this, brother, we have been in some places, movements, been around leaders, whatever, where it's like, I've learned as much about what not to do as right. to do. And so I think for those people, you better realize, like, God is training you. God's not done with you. If you have a dream in your heart for prayer, worship, the presence of God, building a true altar where you maybe have a house of prayer, you have nonstop worship, or you have a culture of really the true presence of God. Because I want to make this clear. God, I hope I don't get trouble for this, but like, when you come to our campus, we have a campus model. When you come to New Orleans, you'd be like, okay, this feels different. Something is different here. I've had the chance to go to all the other campuses and I'm going, you don't feel the same. Something's different here. What is it? I'll tell you what it is. It's a people who don't change the subject from his presence. Bottom line, his presence is preeminent. If he comes in a way and wants to do something, we're like, hey, we're submitted to that. That does something in the atmosphere, the culture of a place. So yeah, I think that not forcing your way is very important. Allowing it to come to you, allowing these things to open up themselves. It really is God having to do that. There's all obviously practical things, and I'm sure you could listen to this podcast and find a lot of practical ways to like start that. I would say don't focus on the amount of time. Focus on pastoring people into the revelation. Because if people can get the revelation that, oh my gosh, this will change our church. This will change everything we're doing on the local level. And we're going to do it in a way that serves people, that's healthy. It doesn't wear people out. You know, we're not trying to attain to some idea of prayer sets every morning and night. Eating. Like, the more we do, the better it is. Got to get that out of our heads. And we got to just say, we want to build a culture where the people understand that we are building a place for the Lord. And one of the things that really helped us, and I want to say, is that we did a school in tandem with the House of Prayer launch in our local church. And so for 3 months, we taught a group of about 30 people, and they would literally get taught. And then we'd go straight in and start our prayer sets. And it just was like wildfire. It was like gasoline. So I think it's really important to teach. And so, yeah, I don't know. That's my 2 cents. We could write a book on that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so good. I love that. So I'm thinking about, I talked to, you know, people that are leading houses of prayer or trying to build prayer rooms, that kind of thing. And they struggle to get worship leaders a lot of times. And you're talking about how you guys had an abundance of them, you know, even as a smaller campus, you got 50 musicians or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I know you're saying, oh, we just kind of prioritize the presence and all these musicians showed up, which I understand there's probably some truth to that, but I'm sure there's other things you've done. I mean, you've cultivated some things, you and your wife. I know you guys have cultivated giftings, you've cultivated relationships, like, And like for someone that's, I mean, I even talk to pastors who are looking for worship leaders for their church, that kind of thing. For somebody that's not a worship leader, but they want to attract worship leaders or musicians, or, you know, they want to try to, they're trying to build a house of prayer and they're trying to connect with them. You have any advice for those people? Because I know we do have some of those that are tuning in as well. They want that atmosphere, that culture of worship, but maybe they're not a worship leader themselves. What advice would you give?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it's even happening in our own church in Louisiana here, where we have now 9 campuses, maybe 1 in Alabama, 8 in Louisiana now. And so it's very true, because now as we're taking a role in our church where we are overseeing all the worship and helping to just kind of, you know, just serve people and just kind of serve the whole church, I'm seeing that. I'm seeing campuses with 3,000 people have to hire people from an hour out of town just to play guitar for them.
It's crazy.
I'm going, wait a minute. We got 300 people at our church on any given Sunday morning, but like through the week, there's morning and evening prayer sets. There's this culture. Like, how are you doing that? This doesn't make sense. And I'm going to tell you 3 things I believe. The first thing is, I think the house of prayer, one of the biggest, we know all the theological, hopefully we have a lot of theological understanding. One of the most practical, beautiful things about house of prayer culture and having sets of worship, I should say, is that you're building community. And one of the reasons musicians and young people especially will come, young adults have flooded into our church and musicians are coming. Listen, we get the best musicians start coming to our prayer sets from other churches. And we even still have people that will play faithfully in our prayer sets, then don't even go to our church, but they're actually part of our greater community in our local church, because they are so like, well, we don't do this at our church, so we're just going to. So the first thing is community. We, and my wife really deserves the credit from this, because Danielle is the true pastor. And I'm the guy that's like, I'm forever trying to be a better pastor, but like, she is just naturally amazing with people. She's like, oh my God, it's Stephen's birthday. I'm like, bro, if it was up to me, nobody would get a birthday card. I don't care about your birthday. I don't even care about my birthday. So you ain't getting it. I don't care. Whatever. You know, I'm just, but my wife, bro, she bringing you cookies. She got a birthday card. She's going to send a text to the group. She's going to call. Like, so one of the big things was community. Around house of prayer, the presence of God, we are encountering God together. And then my wife's going, every other month, at least, we're going to do a huge community night. You're coming up to our house, we're grilling out. We're going to pack our house with 40 people. We're going to prophesy over everybody, glaze them out. We're going to have coffees. We're going to, you know, do all this stuff. So community is first. You build community and like do stuff where you're not doing ministry. I mean, because when you're doing house of prayer, it's like these kids are then, can I say this to you? I'm not in there every day. It's running without me. These young people are running it. And what are they doing? They're having prayer sets and then powering God together, hearing God together, and then they're going out to eat. They're having community nights. They're doing this. They're starting home groups, Bible groups. So this thing is just happening. Community is imperative to mothering and fathering, which is what I'm saying. Like, we have made ourselves and seen ourselves as mother and father. I remember a worship leader. I won't say his name. You know him. Huge worship leader in the day. And he would literally talk about, I am not your pastor and I'm not a father. I'm uncle. Call me uncle so-and-so. And I thought, man, that's so interesting, because I've shared that same view where I've been like, I ain't your pastor. You know why I said that? I didn't want the responsibility to have to steward their soul. And I was thinking, I'm not old enough. I never signed up to be a pastor. I'll be a prophet. I'll be an itinerant. I'll be a whatever, but I ain't going to be your pastor. So finally, when God made me be a pastor, it made me realize that really just simply fathering and mothering the people God brings into your fold and really caring for them, bro, people flock to that community, mother, father. And then thirdly, I would just simply say, we offer freedom. When you offer musicians and worship leaders freedom, and I don't mean, hey, bro, when pastors come up and say, now listen, brother, I'm so glad you're here. I just want you to know you have complete freedom to do whatever you want. that stresses me out even more sometimes, because I'm like, what do you mean? I'd rather you tell me what you want so I don't have to ambiguously search for what you're looking for. You know, it's like, thanks for the whatever. Like, I'm going to be free with you. You want me to or not? I won't do what God says, but you want me to or not? You don't have to tell me. But I'm saying that because we offer real freedom. When you come and out around Danielle and I, what we're building, we never made people feel like you've got to come to our church to be a part of what we're doing for the city. We were like, I don't care. We never make people feel bad for missing their prayer scene. Like, hey, I couldn't come. It's like, well, all right, cool. Like, I beat it. Are we trying to accept finagle? Yes. Are we trying to go after excellence? Yes. Are we ordering it? Yes. We're booking prayer sets a month in advance. Like, it is a serious thing. We're doing all the logistics. We're doing all the practicals. But musicians will come where they feel the freedom to be nurtured. And if you just bring in people and say, play these songs, do this thing, I want a great set, and play the top 40, and that's what you're going to do, then they're like, great, you don't have to pay me eventually. This sucks. Guess what we're doing? We're paying nobody. You know why? Because they're able to come in and experiment in the presence of God. You know, they're able to have freedom, and they feel that in the culture. And I think the more that we do that, the more that keeps getting added. Now, here's what's funny. We at the campus are now resourcing all the other campuses with our musicians. Right? Come on, guys. The proof is in the pudding, dude. As soon as we started this house of prayer expression, this worship expression more than a Sunday morning, when we offered vision beyond a good Sunday morning, people were like, I'm in. I want it. So, yeah.
So good. All right, you just said a whole lot, and I want to pull on a few of those threads. You said the thing about fathering and mothering, and I just want to throw in my two cents on that, because I have seen I've lived this out, where we have been doing house of prayer related ministry for years and years and years with such a hesitancy, and not I'll call it what it is. It's a fear of taking responsibility for other people in the way that a pastor would, and to really care for people in the way that they would. And I know that there's others who are doing the same thing and have done the same thing, running parachurch ministries, but being, you know, oh, well, we don't want to care for you, you know, find your own church. And I do think that there's times when we need to step up and take the responsibility, like you said, and take the risk and carry the load, carry the weight of caring for people and being willing to say, hey, this can be family. This can be real spiritual family. This can be church. We can be fathers and mothers. And that's not easy.
Why are we afraid to call it church, bro? Like, what is it with our stream? Yeah. I was this guy, but like, there is so much. You still hear that, don't you? People are like, We're not a church. It's like, dude, I just feel like sometimes that's really like, in my case, it was a cop out.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, our house of prayer was basically, I mean, houses of prayer we've led have basically been churches, but we just don't want to call them churches, because then you got to deal with the responsibility, everything that's in the Bible that comes along with, you know, being leaders, all the, you know, qualifications, and, you know, you got to deal with the whole thing. And that's why we've probably seen a lot of unhealthy stuff that's flourished in some of these contexts too, is because there hasn't been the fullness of, you know, of the kind of spiritual families that God wants, I think. But I want to keep pulling on the thread of freedom that you brought up, because that's huge. And I know you have pushed the envelope with some of your own worship and some of the songs you've written, and the styles are maybe not what people would typically consider normal, you know, worship sound or whatever. It's been very creative and bluesy and different things. And I think it's amazing. Maybe just say a little bit more about that. Like, what's the value of freedom, spontaneity, creativity, prophetic environment when it comes to worship? Because there's some risk involved to that for everybody involved when you open up and create an environment of freedom where people are doing spontaneous stuff and creative stuff. You know, you get some of the weird things that we talked about at the very beginning, but you also get some real glorious, beautiful stuff. So maybe talk about that for a few minutes.
Hey guys, it's Matthew. We'll get back to the episode in just a moment.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider becoming a paid subscriber. Paid subscribers receive exclusive access to brand new bonus podcast episodes every month, along with our library of previous bonus episodes. You will also get free access to my Enjoying Prayer video course, bonus articles from our Substack newsletter, discounts on books, and more. You can become a paid subscriber today for only $5 a month or $50 a year. If you've enjoyed this free podcast, becoming a paid subscriber is a simple way for you to help us cover the cost of producing this resource and partner with Presence Pioneers Media in equipping the church in day and night prayer, prophetic worship, missions, and revival. Click the link in the show notes or visit media.presencepioneers.org to sign up today.
Yeah, I mean, the wheat grows with the tares, right? I mean, sometimes it's like, if you want the famous scripture we all talk about, you know, where if the stall is messy, I don't know this scripture, but you know it. We all know it. It's like the messy stall is like there's oxen there. There's things happening. You're cultivating something. But if the stall's clean, there's no life there. It's like Bill Johnson says, a great yard's orderly and very nice and put together, but it's dead. No, and you go to a children's room in a church and it's insanity because there's life there. I think that concept is healthy so long as there is leadership that is not afraid of confrontation, as long as there's leadership that's not afraid, once again, to be mom and dad. Let me tell you something, bro. If my kids are acting stupid and wild and crazy, they've been to find out, bro. Like, I'm going to smack some. I'm gonna get down on them. We have a joke in our house where I'd say, I'm going to soak them, because my wife read the Danny Silk book about giving your kids a choice. And I said, yeah, we had a lot of fun with that, because I'm like Appalachian born, you know, get whoopings. No whippings, bro. Where I come from is a whooping. It's a H before the W, whooping. And literally, it's just funny. So, like, I'm going to bring order in my house, like, I'm going to do that because boundary lines bring safety, right? I'm not going to let my son walk through the house naked as a teenager. And he is wild right now, bro. He be doing some crazy stuff. And I'm like, you can't do that with your little sisters in the house. You know, get it? So, like, if someone's being crazy in the church saying, I have to have the gumption and the tenderness as a father to be like, hey, that's great, but I'm also going to make sure everyone else feels safe. So a lot of times I'm narrating the room as a pastor, as a leader, to help bring language where need be. Bro, we got this young lady when we first started. She had got up. You want to talk about experimenting? I wasn't there, but we found out she was going, hey, I want everyone to put your hands in the air. And we're just going to, like, you're going to feel the tingle of the Lord. Let's just tingle the... Now the Lord's just tingling us. Now let's feel the tingle of the Lord on her. And I'm like, oh my God, we're tingling with the Lord now. We have to address it and be like, hey, sorry, like, whatever, people are growing and learning. Like, it's a great place to learn. The opposite is, I take that over the opposite, bro. Because let me tell you the opposite. I've seen it, and it's suffocating, and it's miserable, and it's religious, and it's grievous to the spirit, because it's this thing of rushing control. You start nitpicking everything. And I've watched worship leaders in those places where you can tell they know they're being watched. They're being judged. And by the way, I'm in a church where we used to literally watch on Monday the worship set from each campus and critique and evaluate our sets based upon excellence. And I'm like, dude, to a degree, I get that. But I don't know about you, bro. I have never watched the live stream of myself and thought, you know what? I'm going to put that out for everybody. Every time I've seen a live stream, one of the best meetings we've ever had. I go back and listen. I'm like, yo, that sounded like trash. But in the moment, it was glory.
Yeah.
So, Dave, like, I just think there's this idea as leaders, we've got to have, like, we're going to have control. We're going to make sure people feel safe. If someone's acting a fool and doing something wild, I'm going to, you know, have grace and tenderness, correct, guide them, and watch them grow. And the beautiful part is when you get that freedom to have a little bit of a mess, messes are fine. Just deal with it. You know, address it. Just like the lady that cackles in the back every time the Holy Spirit comes and there's like, ha, ha, ha. It's like, you can laugh it up, but there's a certain point I am going to call you out. And I'm going to say, hey, now you're distracting. Now, this is just me. I'm not telling everybody to do it a certain way. But I think if you want freedom in worship, you've got to leave room for expression, because God isn't weird, but people are. And so just let them be weird to a degree and then deal with them. And if they don't receive correction, then there's a deeper issue, right? But if they can hear with humility, it's like, you're going to be good. So anyway,
yeah. I love that. Really good. Yes. It really helps people be free when they know that there's some clear boundaries, doesn't it? When they know that, when they say, hey, these are the borders, but all within this space, go for it. And people go, oh, okay. So now I know where the lines are. So now within that space, I can just run wild. And it really helps people, you know, feel like there's less pressure. It's kind of like when you said the pastor told you, oh, just be free. And it makes you kind of go, wait a second. So what do I do? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like that, because it's like, if you, and maybe Sunday morning is not the place for that. Everyone wants logistics. Good. It's like, yeah, Sunday morning is the front porch, bro. It's the living room. Like, let people in your living room. I don't take people to my bedroom the first time they come to my house. I don't, bro. I might have my underwear laying around. You don't come to my bedroom. But like, to me, that is a little bit more akin to the prayer room. And I think that's why it's so important for the church to just open our eyes. So like, guys, let the worshipers experiment and let them build a place for the presence of God and pray and worship. To me, that's the simplest thing. Even once a week, if you do that, it is going to revolutionize your church if you don't have anything like that currently.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good wisdom. People sometimes try to want to fit everything in on a Sunday morning, and that's not always the best place for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I have been changed, bro. I'm going to be honest with you. Danielle and I are like, well, we go to churches now. They're like, 4-hour Sunday morning services. I'm like, bro, I feel like I can appreciate those, but like, I ain't trying to do those every Sunday for all us.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm just grown cold, but I'm like, I found out that you can get some really deep, incredible worship on a Sunday morning, especially when your worship room is burning throughout the week.
Right.
You show up on Sunday, it's like, we're already there. We don't need time, you know.
Right, exactly. When you're not trying to do it all on Sunday morning, yeah, you can do a shorter worship set because you're worshiping all week. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
I love that.
You've been at this for a while now, teaching about worship, talking about worship, writing books, leading worship. I'm curious, have you changed your mind about things? You just kind of gave us one, I guess, maybe. changed your mind about things like even biblically or practically? Yeah. Are there any of those you'd be willing to share, like how you've evolved, or maybe, you know, things you taught previously that you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't said that before.
Yeah, dude, probably a ton of stuff. And even currently,
right.
You know, if I'm really, really transparent, and I'm obviously, there's parts of my walk with God and there's parts of my theology, you know, which is just my view of God and how he moves and works and acts. I think there's parts of that inside of me, Matt, honestly, that I still don't have figured out. I even things that I was so sure about, you know, 10, 15 years ago that now I would say I'm absolutely not sure. And there are some things that I'm even more convinced at the same time. I would say when it comes to this revelation of worship, priesthood, tabernacle of David, hosting God's presence in the earth, you know, I would say in that way, I'm as strong as I've ever been. I'm as passionate as I've ever been. I'm as sure as I've ever been. But, you know, with other things, my theology is constantly growing. I would say that I find myself currently in a really precarious thing where, you know, I don't know that I belong to any specific stream. Whereas I think in the day, I was happy being a part of this pack and that crew and that company of wild, fasting, Nazarite, you know, revival thing. But I don't find that I sit there anymore. And frankly, I find that,
But then, you know, I don't necessarily fit completely, you know, peg in a round hole either with maybe the other side of that spectrum, per se. Whether you're talking theologically, eschatology, whatever it is, I'm there's things I'm very unsure. Now, as far as specific things dealing with worship, I've come to realize is that it's so much less about me than I thought it was in the beginning. It's just so much less to do with the way that I do worship. I've found that my worship now is so much more of a broad spectrum idea. You know, it really is like obedience. Living my life is worship. Bro, I'm in a place, side note, where I have an entire country record I have completely written and am about to finish recording. I will not be releasing that under my name. It'll be under an alias. And it's not bad songs or anything like that. They're just different. And I don't have a sacred secular divide. And I think if there's any big thing that has really grown in me over the years is the revelation of the incarnation and just the gospel power, the message of the gospel, period, that like incarnational ministry is everything is sacred. Everything is sacred if he's involved in it. And he is. And so, you know, I don't have the sacred secular divide with music. I feel like it all glorifies God and carries the ministry of presence. And I don't know if that makes sense. I feel like it's such a rabbit hole, right? When you start talking theological stuff, because bro, you know what? It like right now I can tell you some stuff that really ticks me off. And it's some of the stuff is this end time eschatological view that is so sure of itself. Mm. And I think that when I sense eschatology with absolute certainty, I get really scared. I'm like, man, can we just, and so I see the doomsday stuff and I see the, and even the political stuff in our day, I got some stories about like, we're in a place in the church now, man, where a lot of the people we ran with and came out of, if you will, I see a lot of those camps now. I'm kind of in it, but on the edge of the inside, if you will, you know what I mean? And I'm looking at it more outside in and I'm going, I feel like a lot of our contingency of the church charismatic place we came out of, I just feel like is in bed with Trump, man. And I feel like, and it maybe has the leaven of Herod more than we actually thought. Maybe the accusation against Trump is too sweeping. Maybe it's not nuanced enough, but for sure, there is such a leaven of Herod and a leaven of the Pharisee that exists in the evangelical American church that I'm scared right now a little bit about where we go from here, because there seems to be even a divide in the church right now. And so I'm trying to return to, I'm just trying to open and broaden my scope outside of the charismatic world in which I was raised, in which many things were just absolute certainty and true. And I don't know. That's my little spiel. What about you, bro?
That's good. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think you got a prophetic grace on your life, and I appreciate the perspective that will call some of those things out. I agree with you on all of that. And I think the coming out of the hyper charismatic or out, I don't know if I'm out or not, but anyway, just growing up,
we're in the edge of the inside.
Growing up in a hyper charismatic environment, the focus is sort of on the transcendent, rather than the imminent. And so I think, and God is both. He's both way beyond anything. There's wild supernatural encounters that we can have with him, but yet he's also very present with us. He's imminent. He's with us in the day-to-day, in the food we eat, in our children, in our work and play. And so, I would agree. That's an area I feel like I've grown in recognizing, you know, that God is not just in these dramatic church encounters, but he's in, you know, all of our lives, but yet still believing in all the other stuff, still believing in the supernatural, still believing that one moment in the presence of God can shift everything. Yeah. So I feel the same way. So maybe we can wrap up. I know we're coming up on time here. Maybe we can wrap up with some of what you're seeing in the young generation. Because I'm personally very encouraged by what I'm seeing, hunger in the next generation. There's a lot of talk about Gen Z being open to God. You said you guys are having a good number of young adults kind of in your campus there in New Orleans. And so what are you seeing in this next generation? in general with the Lord, but with worship specifically?
Well, in general, yeah, I would say what I see. And I would say my sample size too, being a local and an inner city in the American South, and then as well being involved in youth movements, other movements in the South, and even, you know, circuit riders out on the West Coast and the YWAM missions kind of movement. I am at the same, I am so encouraged, man. Because I find that God is faithful. That's what I see through it all, is that no matter how wicked, evil, debased, you know, morally repugnant, you know, the culture may become, it's like God always keeps a remnant. God always has a remnant. And I see some of the most anointed fire youth. Dude, you talked earlier about how I had experimented in my worship with different musical styles. And that's true. You know, even some of those to my detriment, I look back and I cringe, but you know, I was just
the wheat and the tares.
Yeah, exactly, bro. Oh, some of those tares need to be ripped up for into the pit of hell. But you know, I listened to some of that music, and then I listened to, like, I'll just give a shout out. I think they're called like Mountain People Worship. I don't know if you've heard of them.
My wife loves them. Yeah.
And the guy that does that, I forget his name, but he's just great. And I pull that out because, man, when I hear that, I'm like, I see a bunch of young people now with even less religious baggage on them for their worship. They're like, I can worship and be a rapper. I can worship and play jazz. I can worship and do blues or do country. I can worship and do, you know, soul music. And you know, I look back and I just feel like it's expanding, it's growing. And maybe one of my stupid songs where I'm trying to do Stevie Ray Vaughan plus worship is like, does something to spark one guy who sparks another guy who 15 years later now, bro, I'm going to meetings and meeting literal worship leaders. There's another amazing worship leader out there. His name's Todd Mendez. He's at Legacy Nashville. You know, he like came up to me years ago and was like, bro, you prayed and prophesied that I would be writing songs, leading worship when I was a like 18, 19 year old kid. Now I'm here doing it. Jesus Culture just did one of his songs, and it's incredible. Actually, I love it. He's just doing so much awesome stuff for the kingdom. And I think, man, it's so cool to see like how God builds upon and builds upon. And so I am, man, I'm seeing the youth. I am so encouraged. I feel like they're going to take it further, faster, better than we could have ever imagined. I'm watching them when they get the revelation of Tabernacle of David 2, bro. It's like mind blowing. I think I want to remind leaders and people who are young mothers and fathers like us in our late 30s, early 40s, and those who are established mothers and fathers, we cannot forget that the basic message that maybe we've grown just kind of numb to is revolutionary for these young ones. Bro, when I go to circuit riders and I speak to 300 fiery 18, 19-year-olds and they hear about the presence of God and the call to host presence as they do missions, they're like, oh my God, I've been waiting for this my entire life. So they are ready for it. And we have to be faithful messengers in this time to father and mother them. And I just want to say, we cannot have the spirit of Saul, which it becomes jealous of the more anointed younger generation, because they're our year, bro. They're more anointed than us. And I want it to be that way. You know why? Because my grandkids are going to be more anointed than them. Yeah. And your great-grandchildren are going to do things that you only saw in dreams and only prophesied in like the glory that you dream one day might happen. So like, I believe glory to glory. And we have to be faithful to be not Saul's, but faithful Samuel's, to identify the Davids, pour oil on their head, and literally make a place for them to be who they're called to be, because that's what it's all about. And I'm in a place now where I get more joy from seeing sons and daughters do records, worship, lead, you know, build, than I do even myself. So yeah, man, let's do it. Let's not be hoarders. Let's not throw spears, because that's the temptation. We look at some of these people that are like doing some things now, and how worship dude is just infiltrating. Glorilla just won the BET Gospel Award, for crying out loud. Like, we have never been more primed for the kingdom of God to have a voice in culture. And I mean, it's exciting, bro. It's so exciting. We're old men, bro. Totally. Okay. We're old now. For us to do a podcast, we're the bridge generation. These kids are going to outdo us, man. So I'm excited.
Totally. That's awesome.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm encouraged by that. This has been a great conversation. So fun.
So fun.
Want to give you a minute here at the end. Do you have anything you want to point people to? I know you have you've done some different online resources and online communities and your albums and all kinds of stuff. Anything you want to point people to connect with you?
Yes, absolutely. I would say go listen to our brand new album. Me and my wife, Danielle, just did this supernatural project because the Lord spoke it into existence, paid for it supernaturally. Wild stories. We did it at Esplanade Studios with our local community here in New Orleans. And it just sounds so good. Even as an audiophile, go listen to our new record, Waking Me Up, because this thing it sounds incredible. The anointing's on it. I love the songs. They're congregational songs. They're songs you can sing Sunday morning. You can sing in your prayer sets. So we're proud of them. We love it. Yeah, go check out our new record. It's everywhere you find music, and all the videos are on YouTube.
Amazing. Yeah. So good. Yeah, I've listened to that. Great, great album. Love it. Sounds good as always. So yeah. Well, Chris, thank you for being back on the podcast. This has been great.
My pleasure. Thank you, bro.
All right.